Today on Question Period, turning promises into policy. Does the Trudeau government's agenda meet expectations? And Destination Canada, the final preparations at home and abroad before thousands of Syrian refugees begin their journey of hope.
Wesleyan House!
It's a ceremony rich in tradition, but the speech from the throne is all about looking forward. It spells out the government's priorities. A tax cut for the middle class.
This is the fair thing to do.
A greener economy.
Strategic investments in clean technology.
A new relationship with Indigenous peoples. A new respect in Parliament. And a renewed focus on peacekeeping and humanitarian support.
We know that helping those in need strengthens our communities and makes them safer and more prosperous places to live.
Joining me from Toronto, Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship Minister John McCallum. So, Mr. McCallum, the throne speech yesterday was a bit thin. There were a lot of big promises missing from that speech, from the withdrawal of the CF-18 fighter jets to fixing the anti-terrorism law to reinstating door-to-door mail delivery. So what's going on?
Well, I think this throne speech sends a very clear message that we are bringing real change to Canada. Certainly in terms of governance and openness and transparency, but at least as important in terms of this middle class tax cut and all of the dollars we are spending on infrastructure that will fill that gap, but also create jobs. So it's all about jobs, tax cuts, openness, transparency. And we are determined to keep our promises, Bob.
But, something as important, for example, as the withdrawal of our air mission in Iraq and Syria is pretty serious and wasn't even mentioned in the throne speech.
Well, look, one of the things about this throne speech is it was short. And I think it's good to be short, but when you're short, you can't say everything. So we have made it very clear we are withdrawing the fighter jets. That's already been stated. That will come, and there's no mystery in that.
Let me ask you this, though. The economy is slowing down, and the opposition parties are saying that there's not a big focus on the economy. And they're pointing out, for example, that the Parliamentary Budget Office are saying that your projection of a $10 billion deficit annually over the next 3 years is going to be a lot higher than that.
Time will tell, but when you say there's not a focus on economy, I would say that's exactly wrong, because as you just said, the economy is weaker. So all the more need to invest money in needed infrastructure to create jobs. That's what Canadians need. They need jobs. And so we ran on a policy of investment in infrastructure and jobs rather than austerity. But we have a finance minister who is determined, as are we all. Fiscal prudence is in our DNA in the Liberal Party. We're the ones under Chrétien-Martin who balanced the budget, paid down debt for 10 years. So we are not neglecting that, but we are saying that right now, priority number one is investment, tax cut for the middle class, and creation of jobs.
Now, can you give us an update on the refugee resettlement?
I think it's going extremely well. We have fantastic cooperation from every province across the country. All of the political parties in Ottawa, they don't necessarily say it's perfect, but they're on the same page for the basic project. So this is totally a nonpartisan national project. The Governor General has been also leading the charge. So this is what Canada should do, and sooner rather than later, they will become full-fledged, productive, working Canadians who will make our country stronger.
Well, I know you've been traveling the country talking to your provincial representatives and mayors. And what are they saying to be a major stumbling block or a major problem in bringing these people here? Have they flagged any issues like housing, for example?
Yes. Well, look, I was in four cities. In each city, I was accompanied by the corresponding provincial immigration minister. So we're all on the same page. We're all working as hard as we can to make this happen. But when I was asked what are the priorities, I say there are three priorities in terms of possible bottlenecks: housing. So we are working very hard because we have to welcome our newcomers not only with a smile, but with a roof over their heads. And so that is a challenge. You know, I'm communicating honestly with Canadians. That's a challenge.
So what
visas in Lebanon are a challenge.
So
we will overcome those.
What is the solution to getting these people homes?
There are many business people who have come forward to offer free or subsidized rental accommodation. I thank those people in the course of my tour, and I am hoping they will be the tip of the iceberg, that this is a national project, not a business not a government project. So I am hoping and I am confident that business will come forward, Canadians will come forward with contributions that will help us on the housing front. That is already happening, but I hope that there will be a lot more to come so that we will put a roof over people's heads, and in the interim period, they will learn English, they will learn about Canada, they will receive any medical treatment they need because they have come from a horrific situation. But sooner rather than later, they will get jobs and they will work and they will become Canadians like all of us.
And how did we go from 25,000 refugees to 50,000, and what does that mean in terms of cost?
25,000 is our commitment for government-assisted refugees. In the first wave of 25, some of those will be private. In the course of 2016, we'll have 10,000 more government-assisted refugees, and we'll have an unknown number of additional privately sponsored, depending on our capacity to process them and the desires of the private sector. So 35,000 from the time we were elected to the end of 2016 is a minimum. It could go as high as 50,000, but we do not know exactly what it will be. That has to go through cabinet as well.
Minister, thank you for coming in to speak to us. Greatly appreciated.
Great pleasure, Bob. Thank you all very much.
This speech from the throne doesn't even mention the word ISIS.
There's no mention of new oversight provisions for C-51.
No mention of the agriculture sector, no mention of the auto sector, no mention of the energy sector.
And Mr. Trudeau said that he was going to change the retirement age from 67 back to 65. No mention of that.
No mention of the private sector.
Door-to-door mail delivery, no mention of that.
From the opposition parties, red flags over Liberal campaign promises that were left off the government's list of priorities.
The throne speech is so thin, there's not a lot to vote for, but then again, that also means there's not a lot to vote against.
With me in the studio, opposition leader Rona Ambrose. So welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And let me ask you right off the top, are Conservatives going to vote against or support the throne speech?
Well, you know, I have to take it to my caucus first, but, you know, we all saw...
What's the betting here?
I'm going to bet that our members of caucus will probably want to vote against, and I'll tell you why. I mean, first glance at the speech. I mean, of course, it is the election platform for the Liberal Party, but as many people saw yesterday, it really is a recipe for big government. And, of course, you know, as the Conservative Party of Canada, our big focus is on the economy and on respecting the taxpayer. And we've said, you know, in the last couple of weeks that that's what we will be. We will be the check and balance for the taxpayer. And what we saw yesterday in the throne speech was big government, big spending. And of course, you know what that means. It leads to big deficits, structural deficits long term, which then leads to cuts to services and, of course, higher taxes.
So tomorrow, when the question period begins, you're going to go right after them on the spending, because the Parliamentary Budget Officer says that this $10 billion deficit every year you're promising for the next 3 years is imaginary. It's going to be far more than that.
Exactly. And so we have to ask those tough questions of the Finance Minister and the Prime Minister. You know, it's just like the issue of pulling out our CF-18s. It's just like the issue of the 25,000 refugees. These are election promises that the Prime Minister made during an election. But times change. Things change. And so the question we'll ask him on the finance side is, look, the economy is starting to weaken. You've made this quote-unquote promise about deficits up to $10 billion a year, but we now know from the PBO that it's going to be much, much bigger. So what is he going to do? Is he going to raise taxes? Is he going to spend more? I mean, what is he going to do? Where will he find the money?
And what about the whole issue of pulling out of the US-led air war? They're under a lot of pressure from their allies to do something more than simply say, we're going to do some more training. So are you going to be holding their feet to the fire and say, okay, what are you going to be doing? Because just sending in a few more special forces is hardly going to satisfy the Americans or the French.
or the Germans or any of our allies. I mean, we've seen the UK step up this week in terms of bombing in Syria. We've seen the Germans step up just a few days ago in terms of voting in their parliament to enhance and expand their role in the fight against ISIS. It is troubling that after the attacks in Beirut and the attacks in Paris, that the Prime Minister stuck with, again, this election commitment of pulling out our CF-18s. My hope is that he would have reassessed that commitment and said, look, things are different. Things have changed. The rest of our allies are enhancing and expanding their role in the fight against ISIS, and we are going to do the same.
If he does it by, say, keeping our surveillance aircraft and our refueling and significantly increasing special forces, is that good enough?
We want to see what he's going to do, but it concerned me that in the speech from the throne yesterday, the government couldn't even use the word ISIS. And if you can't even name your enemy, I wonder how seriously you take the threat and how seriously you're willing to take the fight to your enemy. I am concerned about that. And the Prime Minister, I think, has used some softer language when he talks about the threat of terrorism. I think Canadians, by and large, my sense is, wants the government and wants the Prime Minister to stand resolutely with our allies. And so we'll obviously be holding their feet to the fire on that as well.
Oh, let's talk about refugees. We're supposed to bring in 25,000. Now it seems to jump to perhaps 50,000. There are some real security challenges here, particularly with ISIS. And there are real legitimate concerns that ISIS might try to get some jihadists in. Yeah. So is that a focus of next week as well?
I haven't spoken to any Canadians that are not generous and want to accept refugees. This is part of our culture, it's part of our history. But people are worried about the rush. Again, the rush to meet an election commitment. The government has plenty of time, plenty of resources to implement this plan in a way that will ensure that security is adhered to. And it's implemented in a way that refugees will actually be settled properly. I'm concerned about seeing new arrivals into Canada being put onto military bases. I'd rather see them, like we have in the past, come into communities where the kids can get into school right away, parents can have a home, and they can hopefully have a job soon, and be integrated into the community in a way that is healthy for them and healthy for the community. So this rush to meet this self-imposed deadline, I think, was a bad idea. I'm glad to see the Prime Minister backed off on that, but I think he should take that advice from Canadians going forward and just take it slow.
And let me ask you also about, he's made a lot of promises to Canada's Indigenous people. I know you now support an inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women, which is different than what Mr. Harper did. But there are a lot of promises. He's promised to implement all the truth and reconciliation recommendations. Where's the money going to come from?
I don't know where. I mean, obviously, there's goodwill. And there's goodwill with all Canadians and with our party as well to help Aboriginal people in terms of self-sufficiency and economic independence and all of the things that we worked so hard on as well. But all of it costs money. My concern is to just just across the board say we accept every recommendation. Well, I think there was 92 recommendations. Has that been costed out? Do we even know if it's necessarily good policy? We don't know. On the murder to missing Aboriginal women inquiry, I've said from the beginning and all along that there's been many, many studies done on this issue. And Bob, you know that I've been involved in the issue of ending violence against women my whole life. I don't necessarily think we need more studies, but if the government is going to do this, I say to them, fine, but please do it fast. Do it quickly, because what we need is more action. We need to make sure we have tough laws in place, and those laws are on the books today. Perpetrators need to go to jail, and they need to be held accountable for the violence that they perpetrate on women and children in First Nations and off First Nations. And Aboriginal women are very vulnerable women, and there's a reason that they're leaving their communities. We have to address some of the domestic violence issues. We also have to address some of the issues around poverty and other issues. If you're going to do this study, fine, but do it fast and don't stop acting in the meantime, because these women need our help.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
Thank you.
Coming up, a blueprint for action to improve the lives of Canada's Indigenous people.